Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, our 2022 recruitment update, part one of two. Folks, this is Mark, if you've forgotten, and I generally write the Manager Tools cast, but this is a special case where we got so much positive feedback from managers who listened to our Career Tools feed that we thought we would share this Career Tools cast with you. It's an annual cast where we talk about what's going on in the job market, and things have been pretty frothy out there, in case you hadn't noticed. And so we talk in this cast about the current hiring market, what they've seen, and what to do for your career. So, very helpful. I used to enjoy being parts of these casts until I stopped doing Career Tools. So, enjoy. Hey folks, since we're talking about the hiring market, might as well remind you again about the interviewing series, which is now part of our licensee product. For only $200 a year, you get access to all of our show notes for all three of the casts, Executive Tools, Career Tools, Manager Tools. And you also get access to all of the archive of Career Tools and Manager Tools and a year's worth of Executive Tools here in the middle of 2022. And the license also includes the interviewing series, which I think is up to close to 70 podcasts now, 20 of which are behind the paywall that cover the core questions like tell me about yourself and significant accomplishments and examples and leadership styles and how to close and so on. If you're testing the waters, and there's no reason not to if you've listened to our guidance about being open to opportunities, you've got to get the interviewing series, and the best way to do that is with the license.
Once a year, we do a resume update. We've been doing that since, I think, 2009, because we get so many questions about, I've just seen this new thing in resumes, and what does that mean for my resume? And the answer is always nothing. You don't change your resume because the purpose of it has never changed. And the rest of the year, we try as much as possible to do timeless guidance. So it doesn't matter if you listen to this in 2022 or 2032, the guidance in Career Tools should still work. You know, people are people and people won't have changed.
Yeah. Don't not change your resume, just don't change the format structure.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
A quarterly look at your resume, you know.
Yes.
And yeah, make changes if they are suited or yes. Needed.
But last year, the 18 months beforehand had been so weird that we decided to do a hiring market or a recruitment market update. And this year, things are still weird and there's still lots going on. And so we wanted to do a 2022 edition. Now, to go back up, I went back to the 21 edition to listen to or to read what I'd written last year. And I was surprised at how much of it still applied. So if you haven't listened to that one, I will go listen to that one as well. But for this, we have set our guidance within the context of the broader economic system. So we've tried to explain to you what's happening in the market, what that causes, how you can work out what's happening, and then told you what to do as an employee or as a individual contributor and as a manager who manages people. And that means hopefully that although we are discussing the situation in 2022 and we're discussing in the most part the situation in the US, you can extrapolate, you can compare these conditions that we're describing to the situation you're in and see whether or not there's a parallel. And if there is, the guidance should still work for you. So we're trying to turn timely into timeless and make it boundaryless, make it apply for everybody as much as we can.
Yeah. And I think Wendy and I are probably going to speak as much as we can or we feel, you know, qualified to markets and trends. And I feel like whenever we talk about people's behavior and their like some psychology stuff, mm-hmm. we always, you know, offer a disclaimer. We're not psychologists and we're not, you know, medical
professionals. We're not economists.
Maybe we should say we're not economists and we're not, you know, experts on markets, but certainly with Wendy's expertise and just, you know, experience. I think we've got some good stuff to cover here today. So our outline for today is the recruitment market is not homogenous. Hiring becomes more opaque. Return to work. And our last point is unionization. So we've got a lot to cover today, a lot to unpack. But our first point is that the recruitment market is not homogenous. So the demand for candidates is not uniform across industries. or locations or specialties. You can't extrapolate just because you read one headline on, you know, Yahoo or the Wall Street Journal that now that applies to you and your role or your industry. You can't expect that to be applicable in all situations. So just because you read one headline doesn't mean that you should go change jobs now, right? This is always true, but it seems to be particularly true midway through 2022, where we are now at the time of recording this.
So let's take a step back and sort of think of the broader context before we go down to what this means for you. So this time last year, we reported that the demand for candidates was high. Almost everybody was telling us they were hiring and they couldn't find enough candidates. That went for practically every industry and every location that we knew. The pandemic restrictions were lifting. There were supply chain issues still. Everybody wanted to get back to normal. And so there was an increased demand in practically everything you could think of. I think the only thing for which demand went down was hand sanitizers. Mm-hmm. But that meant there was a really high demand for new staff, an abundance of roles to apply for. And there had been a stagnation in the recruitment market. People didn't want to move during the pandemic. And so as soon as it started to lift, they started to move jobs, which causes, you know, the churn causes...
It's like a domino effect, right?
Exactly, yeah. And so everything you read said there's huge demand for hiring. The natural result of that is that prices go up. And we've seen that in the last year in housing, in food, in airfare. When the demand is high, you raise your price and get more for it. And then, you know, there's the war in Ukraine, there's more supply chain chaos, there's energy companies that need to carry out repairs to harden the grid. There's a million headlines about why prices are increasing.
Yeah, there's this kind of a micro economy that was created, or maybe a micro industry is probably a better term for it, with COVID testing and all kind of everything that was needed for that. And clearly lab technicians, you know, people doing that work, that became its own thing. I mean, there were big companies that didn't even exist 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. You know, I remember talking to someone at a conference once saying, you know, they were thinking about taking on a very senior role with an organization that started as 6 people doing COVID tests in someone's garage, which doesn't necessarily strike me as the most sanitary environment. And it had grown into a 200-person company in 12 months, which is fast. And now, look at where we are now. The need for that is going away, right? It's so fading significantly.
Yeah, exactly.
So just a small little thing there. I think that's an interesting note.
So overall, the consumer price index in, where are we, June? I think this was in May, was up 8.3% over the last 12 months. So the consumer price index is the government take an invisible basket, a hypothetical basket of things you might buy. So
yes,
bread,
standard stuff,
milk. Gas, the standard things that a household might need, and they look to see how much that would cost on average at a point in the month. And they compare that month by month and year by year to see how much prices are rising. And going up 8.3% is a pretty big hike in 12 months.
Yeah.
For companies, the cost of making things has gone up because of the supply chain stuff, but also because they had to hire new people. And when you hire new people, are always more expensive than
and less
the
efficient
people you have. Yeah, exactly. So they've had increased cost and they're passing those on to the consumer. And so what the government does is this is essentially inflation and the government response to inflation. Because inflation's a bad thing, right? Because if your wages stay still, as the prices go up, you're able to buy less and less. And at some point, you're not able to buy food, shelter, and clothing, which are the essential things. So governments don't want rampant inflation. It has a million other effects, but that's the big one.
Yeah, a lot of companies don't want rampant inflation as well, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not in consumer goods or commodities market, like, people have less discretionary income if they're spending more money on those staples.
Exactly. Yeah. So the government response in general is to raise interest rates, and that makes borrowing money more expensive, and therefore it starts to tamp the demand. Interest rates still aren't high, but they were at 0% for 2 years during the pandemic. It's definitely higher than in the last 2 years. And if inflation doesn't slow down, the Fed will keep raising interest rates, which should balance things out eventually, but in the short term will make borrowing money, and then all of the things that come after that, more expensive.
And it's never an exact science, right?
No.
So you're always, it's kind of that driving a car analogy. You're always kind of shifting back and forth, making small little corrections, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes there are bigger things in the way, so you have to make larger corrections, but it's always kind of a balancing act. So it's never going to be exactly right. And, you know, the natural consumer reaction, kind of like I just said, is when prices increase, is to not just have less discretionary income to spend on other stuff, but to slow their spending and look for ways to, you know, cut, look for ways, well, maybe we don't take a road trip, you know, this summer because of, you know, gas prices, or maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know if you could cut your milk consumption, but maybe that's, you know, maybe yeah. that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Or you step down a store. So if you shop at Whole Foods, you go to Target. If you shop at Target, you go to Walmart. If you shop at Walmart, you go to the dollar store. That's the usual thing for, you know, staples.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe at some point my wife will stop buying the organic DHA mm-hmm. omega-3
yeah.
most expensive milk that there is. You know, then you step down to the normal 2% or whatever.
Exactly.
It is. Yeah, good point. So at its very simplest, right, there's this wave of push and pull. And as prices increase, people buy less. And then when prices fall, people buy more. And companies react. They do their best to react to increasing prices by increasing supply, which usually means hiring, and to decreasing demand by laying staff off, right? There's this ebb and flow that exists and has a, like Wendy said earlier, like a domino effect mm-hmm. on other things.
But the economy is not uniform. Even though the Fed acts on interest rates as a whole, the economy is not one homogenous thing. And the National Federation of Independent Businesses reported that 61% of firms in all sectors have few or no qualified applicants for current job openings. But at the same time, Beta and Klarna in the financial sector, Netflix and Carvana in other sectors, and actually I saw two more yesterday that I can't remember, are making layoffs, well-publicized layoffs. Mm-hmm. And the new hires at Red Hat, which is an IBM software subsidiary, have found themselves in what I think of as the worst of all worlds. They had job offers, and IBM has, or Red Hat, has rescinded them. And ooh. I saw another two examples of that yesterday as well. So that is coming. And that means there's not one consistent experience across the economy. If 61% of people that are hiring can't find applicants, and yet in another place, people are being laid off or having their offers rescinded, those two things are opposite, but they're happening at the same time.
Yeah. So what all of this really means for your career is that you can't extrapolate from news articles and headlines that you see, you know, in social media and posts on social media. You can't take the information there and truly, you know, use that to apply to your career and your prospects or potential, you know, prospects. I guess potential prospects is redundant because prospects are.
Yes.
Okay. The economy is reported on at a macro level, but your experience is at a micro level. You know, I remember I had a mentor once who said, listen, even if the odds are one in a million, it doesn't matter if the odds are one in a million, if you're the one.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it comes down to what is happening at your level, in your organization, in your role, you, right? Mm-hmm. So companies, like Wendy mentioned, are both, you know, struggling to hire and laying people off. So there's clearly, you know, a wide range of situations for different companies in different industries. Here's the crazy part. It's actually possible that there are companies who are doing both. Mm-hmm. In some parts of the company, they can't find people. And in other parts of the company, they're overstaffed. So yeah, there are companies who are trying to readjust or restructure or try to, you know, change their workforce's skill set, but that's not something you can do on the fly. You know, learning new skills. Think about what, you know, those of you who are listening to this, think about how long it's taken you to get the skills you have. Mm-hmm. It's not something you can just turn a corner or turn a page and now do something completely different. So yeah, if you're trying to extrapolate your prospects from social media or from headlines, what you're going to do is you're going to end up stuck oscillating between optimism of, wow, there's so many great opportunities here, and pessimism of, am I next to be laid off?
Yeah. It's a horrible place to be. But even in the worst recessions, people are still hiring. And even in the best of upturns, there are companies laying people off. You have to look for the specifics in your industry, your specialism, your location, your level of experience, the salary range you want, in order to understand whether the demand for people like you is high or low or medium or something in between.
Yeah. There's no uniformity in prospects or in companies, but there's also not uniformity in the benefits that are being offered either. We think of, you know, salary, but there are companies that are offering, or we've heard of companies that are offering sign-on bonuses. I know of companies, you know, of people that I know that are very close to me who are getting or paying out to their employees retention bonuses, giving people bonuses for staying and being in the company. There are companies who are offering more work from home flexibility. And as, again, in the headlines we've seen, there are a lot of companies that are starting to say, no, you got to be back in the office. And sometimes those companies are recognizing that that's a bit of a burden for some people, or that they have to compete with other organizations that are saying you can work from home. And so what they do is they say, yeah, maybe we'll pay you a little bit more if you're, you know, if we're going to require everybody to come into the office, you know. And again, that's not universal, but mm-hmm. certainly all of these things are potential things that are out there in the market that we know we've heard those stories. There are companies that offer unlimited PTO, and there are companies that are implementing mandatory PTO. And again, I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer there, but it's good to know what is best suited for your situation. Wendy and I may have very different outlooks on PTO. In fact, I've seen studies that say unlimited PTO is a great selling point for recruiting. I've also seen it's not the greatest in some instances, because then people choose or are scared to take their PTO.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be seen as the person who's abusing the unlimited PTO,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff that says if it's unlimited, people don't take it.
Right.
It's better to tell them you've got 10 days, take it, which is why they're doing mandatory PTO, because they did unlimited PTO and it didn't work out for them. But, you know, in another company, unlimited might work. So it's weird that it's not weird, I guess. That it's, you know, everybody's finding a different way to make it work.
Everybody finds a different way to make it work. And again, from a recruitment standpoint, sometimes, gosh, it's just, wow, look, unlimited PTO. Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing. 3 weeks of PTO. Mm-hmm. You go, oh, gosh, there's a constraint here, but there's no constraint over there. Little do you know, once you get in, you go, oh, I can't actually take.
Yes, so, yes. You know. Somebody will think I'm a slacker. Yes,
exactly. Right, exactly.
Mm, yeah.
Hey folks, Mark here. Public Effective Manager conferences continue to fill up. We're having to add virtual events to supplement the public events here in July and August of 2022. So the demand continues. I encourage you to come to the website, look for dates that might work for you all over the United States and overseas as well, and sign up for your conference to teach you about the basics, the management basics that will make you an effective manager.
So we don't recommend that you try and play the hiring market. So like individuals who try and pick specific stocks that will outperform the market, the vast majority of those fail, lose money. Mm-hmm. And so the vast majority of people who decide, oh, the market is hot for my skills, so I'm going to change jobs to get a raise. And then they find out that the grass is not greener on the other side. So that's the downside of doing that. People underestimate the loss of the goodwill that they lose when they change companies. In your company, doing your job right now, you can get people to cover for you. You can pre-wire a meeting and have someone support you at the right point. You have someone at the water cooler who will fill you in on the gossip that you need to know. All of that disappears at a new company. It's gone because you don't have it. And so you have to start over. And that makes that new job a lot harder than you actually think it's going to be.
Well, it's so hard to quantify goodwill, mm-hmm. right? But it's there. And it is more valuable than you can probably put a number on. And we've probably talked about this enough, so I shouldn't belabor this point. But there's something to be said for, we all have seasons in life. And sometimes you have a season where, you know, your performance might suffer or your, right? But if you have 9 years of a track record of being a above average to exceptional performer, and then you have, I don't know, just something goes on, you know, you get an elderly family member that's really going through a hard time, you know, medically, and you need to step away to go help them with stuff. And things come up, right? Mm-hmm. Then if that happens for 3 or 6 months, it's 3 or 6 months at the tail end of 9 years. And there's a clear, you know, point that you have that track record to illustrate that this is a one-off. Mm-hmm. But if you start somewhere new and you happen to have the worst 3 or 6 months in your career when you start that new job, that's all they know.
Yes.
That's their sample size. And I don't wish that on anyone, but it's a reality. It could happen. And you want to understand that before making a move. And that's why we talk about it a lot. And the people that we know that are, you know, reporting that, you know, higher and higher salaries are causing candidates to change. And then there's buyer's remorse. There's, you know, regret. And of course, when that happens, people look for another new job. And now vacancies are high again. And it's this vicious circle. I heard it said once, you can try to time the housing market mm-hmm. with investment properties, but you don't do it with your house.
No.
Right? And that's what we're suggesting here. Your career is too sensitive. There's too much that is on the line in terms of, you know, providing for your family and your career, your life, all of that stuff. So it's too important to, you know, focus just on trying to, as Wendy said, play the market.
And the thing is that everybody looks at the salary. I would do it too. I do it too. If somebody said, nobody knows what my job, my family's joke is nobody knows what Wendy's job is. So, but if I saw this job and somebody said it's paying $1 million, I'd be like, yes, $1 million. But then I'm discounting all of the other things. Like, I like my colleagues. I like what we're doing here. I believe in it. You know, I get to work from home. All of those things you kind of forget because you see that number and you just compare it to your number. And it's seductive. And everybody does that. What you have to do is go the step further and say, yes, that's a really nice number. Now, what about all the other stuff I value about my job? Does it have that too?
Right. Exactly. Okay. So what does this mean for managers? Well, for those of you that are listening that are managers, do not stop doing one-on-ones. Those managers who are surprised by their staff leaving don't have a good enough relationship with them. You should know what individuals in your team are looking for in terms of development and knowing, you know, what's important to them about their job and their career, and making sure that they feel valued and are working, you know, that you're working on creating circumstances that makes them want to stay. Anytime that you're unwilling to lose a team member to another organization and they leave, you failed.
That's the definition of not retention, right? Retention is keeping people in the company. If there's someone you wanted to keep, not as someone who's a good performer, and they go to another company, then that's a ding against your ability to retain. And retention is one of the two functions of a manager.
Absolutely.
So We have a longer podcast in Manager Tools about this, but we'll give you the short version. Don't ever counter offer. If somebody in your team goes and interviews and gets an offer and comes back and says, I've got this offer, now would you match it? Don't. Every time I was in recruitment, and Mark and I have discussed this before, every single time somebody accepted a counter offer and said they would stay at the company, 6 months later, they were back. Always. If you actually genuinely want to leave and you're not just looking for like the number, there are reasons that you want to leave, and more money doesn't make you want to stay. If your boss is annoying you, or you're working with a customer who you hate, another 10 grand makes no difference after 6 months. You're just going to be as frustrated. So that's what happens to candidates. So as a manager, you know, if somebody has gone to that much effort, they're either they genuinely want to leave and there are things that bother them about this job, in which case they're not going to be happy in 6 months' time with the 10 grand or whatever you give them, or they're trying to play you. And who wants people who are playing them on their team? No one. Don't. Don't.
Exactly. Exactly. And if I could make just one more plug for one-on-ones, for those of you managers that are listening to this, listen really closely to what Wendy just said. There's not an amount of money that's going to make it to where you are willing to be miserable doing your job. So sometimes I get people in sessions who are like, well, you know, but I manage very, very senior people. I mean, they make a lot of money, Andrew. I don't need to do one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. Listen to what Wendy just said, right? Yes, they get paid well. They still want a relationship with their boss. They want to know that they're, you know, doing stuff that's valuable. They want to know that they're furthering their career interests. I mean, all of that stuff is still true, even if people make more money.
Mm-hmm. You're right. It's amazing that the number of executive vice presidents who desperately want positive feedback, and they don't get any because everybody thinks that they know they are awesome. No, actually, right. They want feedback.
Look at how much we pay you.
Yeah. You're supposed to just extrapolate from that. No.
Okay, folks, that's it for part one. Hope you enjoyed it. Come back next week for part two. See you then.